Welcome to the Right to Reason podcast. I am your host, Robert Stanley. Today, we are talking about religious trauma and an upcoming conference titled CORT, which stands for Conference on Religious Trauma. Our guests are Janice Selby, a registered professional counselor in Canada helping people through religious trauma syndrome. She is the director of CORT and the host of Divorcing Religion. Accompanying her is Dr. Daryl Ray, an American organizational psychologist and author of two books, The God Virus and Sex and God. He focuses on topics such as secular sexuality and the treatment of religion-induced trauma. Guests for the conference on religious trauma include, and forgive me if I mispronounce their names, Alice Gretchen, Angela Sophie, Candace Gorham, Shawnee Getter, our friends Dan Barker and Dave Warnock, David Hayward, Dr. Clint Heacock, Dr. Terry Daniel, Gent Heimlich, Jen Kaiba, Jeremiah Kamara, Lisa Cohn, Medisa Thomas, Marlene Winnell, Nate Phelps, Rick Allen Ross, Tim Sledge, Yasmin Muhammad, and of course, Dr. Daryl Ray. CORT 2020 was initially canceled due to COVID-19, but it is back and ready to address your potential religious trauma and offering you a different way, your own way, to move forward.
It's the Right to Reason podcast.
You can go your own way.
Label on yourself. It's your journey, and it will take as long as it takes. So do your research, do your self-exploration, continue growing. There's no one way to get to the end. It'll be your way.
This episode of the Right to Reason podcast is brought to you by our patrons and contributors like me. We have all recognized the value of the unrestrained marketplace of ideas and have decided to make a difference. You can make a difference too. Contribute at patreon.com/right and learn more about your right to reason at therighttoreason.com. Your activism is appreciated. You can go
your own way. Janice and Daryl, how are you?
Great.
Doing good, Robert. Good to be back.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you. Dr. Ray, you already have an idea of what you're going to talk about in particular?
Oh, I'm still working on it, but I know what I'm going to talk in particular. I'm going to be angling on three different components, but I shouldn't give my talk now.
You don't, I'm trying to get the spoiler.
He's going
to
wing it.
Oh, no. I will not be winging this one. I'm not a beyond winging thing, but not this one. This is, Janice, this is too important, and I am really impressed, and I'm really happy that you're creating this opportunity for us to talk about this out loud. Nobody, and that's the key thing, Robert, nobody's ever done this before. I mean, we owe a lot of thanks to Marlene Winnell, Dr. Winnell, for coining the term, but we owe just as much thanks to Janice for stepping out here and making this all happen. Oh, and wow. And the perseverance to go through one COVID failure, and now we're back here again. It was not a failure that we had to cancel, or Janice had to cancel the 2020. It was actually an opportunity. I'm all about making lemons, you know, lemonade out of lemons. And I think Janice did the same thing. I know Marlene Prey did the same thing. I know we at Recovering from Religion did it. We took that as an opportunity to start talking about religious trauma. And it has given me personally so many opportunities to talk on podcasts about religious trauma that we probably wouldn't have had if Janice hadn't done the original conference, whether it was canceled or not. So it was an opportunity. And I think, Janice, quite frankly, I think we're building on that opportunity right now. I don't know that you would have gotten some of these 21 speakers if we hadn't been building. We continued building over the last year. So anyway, that's my take on things.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I totally agree. So bringing the conference online also allows people from all over the world to participate. And I know we have folks have purchased tickets from Australia, Europe, the United Kingdom. I know of at least one person in Russia who has also purchased a ticket. So It makes it easier for people to participate when they don't have to pay for a flight and a hotel. Although I certainly do hope in the future we'll be able to see each other all face to face. But for now, this is great. And yes, it's been a whirlwind few months since I decided to move it online and just being a guest on so many podcasts. Of course, none compared to you, Robert. Your podcast is exceptional. Yes.
Sure.
So, yeah, we're really taking advantage of the situation. It's great.
No sarcasm. Sarcasm hinted there at all. You know, I was thinking when I was trying to get Daryl to do spoilers on his talk on my podcast before the event, that if he actually did it, you know, he'd go up there and be on stage or I guess this is all online, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he'd say something like, yeah, you probably heard this already on the Right to Reason podcast, and then to be nothing but silence, like, who? No, we haven't heard it. Go right ahead, Doc. That's first
Our
time. Everybody's confused. So I got something I wanted to play you guys. It's a video I came across fairly recently, even before we were talking about talking. Okay, I don't want to spoil it. I'm going to play it, and I want to get your opinion on it. It's like 2 minutes.
Religious or spiritual trauma as a subset of other kinds of trauma. So we often think of war-related trauma, like stereotypical PTSD, or we can think of sexual trauma. And I think that religious trauma is another uniquely identifiable set of traumas that has a particular set of, has symptoms related to religion, spirituality, and spiritual practices, who has post-traumatic responses to those things that rise to the level of diagnosable PTSD. But on the other end of the spectrum, you have people who have much more mundane negative experiences with religion. So if we think of religious trauma in terms of the kinds of experiences that people have had with their religions, having negative experiences of religious community, putative experiences of the divine being, of religious theologies or religious practices that are harmful to them in ways that diminish the individual's capacity for spiritual or religious engagement in the future. So at the low end, it might just be that.
Boom. That's something I thought was really interesting, because she goes through this whole thing about religious trauma. And this is typically what I think people think of that are in religion about religious trauma, is they're like, oh, you got the wrong one. You didn't get the right one. And then you notice right at the end, she says, and that might keep you from other religious experiences or limit your interest in exploring other supernatural or spiritual. I'm paraphrasing. I already forgot what she said. But you know what I mean? That's what their takeaway is. Instead of saying, no, this thing is fundamentally evil at its core and it's hurting people.
There's definitely kind of a... I don't like to say a split, but there's a difference in thinking, like a couple of groups who do talk about religious trauma. And I think one of those groups are maybe therapists who are actually still religious. And so they would consider themselves progressive rather than fundamentalist. And then there are people like me. I'm on the other end. I am not a fan of any religion. I don't think religion does favors to people at all. I think it hinders people and it hinders society from evolving.
That's what my talk is going to be, is that very issue. Golly, you've already created a spoiler alert here. Everything she said up to that last piece, we could probably agree with. It's that last piece that really says, oh, but it wasn't religion that was the problem. And what we're saying, Janice and I, and many other people that are going to be at the conference, is now religion is the fundamental issue here. And unless you take a good, hard look at how ideology creates trauma, I mean, the ideology of Christianity says you are worthless, your body's your enemy, you're sinful, and you can never be good without this particular God. Women are second-class citizens. And we can go through all the same list with Islam. We go through the same list with Buddhism. Don't let anybody fool you. Mm-hmm. Every one of these religions is fundamentally psychologically damaging. And to think that it wasn't the religion that caused the trauma is to say, well, it wasn't, you know, we would be real clear if it was a soldier coming back from the war. saying, yeah, it was the bomb that went off close to your the IED that went off close to you that helped cause the trauma. Well, religion has always got bombs going off. You get a bomb when you're spanked for masturbating. You get a bomb when your parents abuse you for not getting your Bible lessons learned. You get a bomb when you learn that girls are subservient to boys and men. I mean, every time one of these things happen, it's like a bomb going off to the developing brain of the child. And the child has no way to defend themselves against these bombs. I mean, I use the word bomb intentionally because it is a big deal to these things that kids are exposed to at 5 years old, 8 years old, 10 years old. I mean, when your own body is told, you're told your own body is your worst enemy. What the hell are you going to do about that? That's your body. And your parents are saying you're terrible because you masturbated. Well, that's perfect. Religion does not give people a chance to be normal human beings. And that's a pretty big bomb.
Yeah, and you're so right, Daryl. And I would add also that for those of us who grew up in religious homes, particularly, and were indoctrinated from a young age, religious trauma syndrome doesn't just coincide with PTSD, it's complex PTSD because we are exposed to it over and over and over again. Every Sunday, every Wednesday night, every youth group, every choir practice, whatever it is, singing songs about, you know, being washed in the blood, just such violent imagery, often a lot of war or persecution type imagery as well.
You know, Daryl, you were talking about getting spanked for masturbating. I never did, actually. I got spanked a lot in a real religious home. I never got spanked for masturbating, but what I would do is start masturbating while getting spanked. That was a good way. It shut that whole thing down. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't mess with me there. They were like, what is good? Sorry. Mm-hmm. I took advantage of a horrible joke.
We're not here to talk about sex and sexuality, but the origin of many kinks probably comes from something like that happening to a child.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder about our generation, too, if we grew up with this kind of fetishized concept of nudity and porn. And then we thought this generation's going to come along and they're all going to be porn addicts and sex addicts and crazy because there's so much porn on the internet that they're growing up with. But, you know, like with my kids or with a lot of my coworkers' kids, friends' kids, families, kids, they don't seem to be all that impressed by it. Like they can glance at it and turn it on, turn it off. It's almost like it's not a big deal. And I wonder if our over sensitivity and over objectification, you know, of nudity maybe came from being fetishized when we were kids.
If you do a cross-cultural look at it, I think you're right. I think there's really something to that. I mean, they aren't talking about sex addiction in Sweden or Germany or even England nearly like what we are. Mm-hmm. And it's sex addiction and sexual obsession seems to come from religiosity and religious. Mm-hmm. I mean, the research is showing people who identify as sex addicts are almost always more religious than those who don't.
Or they're partnered with someone who is. Absolutely. Their partner has determined they have this problem and is giving them this label because the partner is uncomfortable with it due to their own religious upbringing or beliefs.
Exactly.
That's one of the places I wanted to direct people to. Your website is divorcingreligion.com. Is that right? If they want to learn more about
it. Yes, and there's a hyphen in between the word divorcing and religion.
I'm going to add that link in the show notes for everybody listening. The link to, is it Court 2021 now or is it just Court?
We're just calling it Court, C-O-R-T.
Okay, that link as well. Recovering from religion. Would that be fair, Daryl?
Yep, .org.
So for sure, recovering from religion, divorcing religion, and Court. All those links in the show notes. But I got another one I wanted to ask you guys about. What about all the trauma from shame due to abortion? Which some of that might just be the natural feelings of loss or of poverty shame or something like that. Or, you know, I'm sure that some of that just happens outside of religious trauma, but there's got to be a ton of it related to religious trauma, all the anti-abortion stuff.
Abortion shame has become a top priority among the fundamentalists. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, funny in a bad sense, the most likely person to get an abortion is a fundamentalist evangelical woman. Mm-hmm. And secular people don't get abortions at near the rate religious people do, partly because they know how to use and they're not purity culture, and they know how to use contraceptives, among other things. Mm-hmm. But oh no, we're getting all sorts of trauma, I think. And I mean, Janice could probably speak better than I can, but I think there is a lot of trauma around abortion, but it's created by the religious shame issues.
It is. And because religion is so pervasive, particularly in the United States, in Canada, we have there's a bit more distance from it, or anyway, it seems that way. But I think it is so incredibly pervasive in the United States. And I hear regularly from women who say they've gone to the doctor for something. It might not be an abortion, but and the doctor in the office will ask them if they want to pray, or let me pray for you. And this is a medical doctor, and the woman is not religious, and she's gone there. She's not interested in what the doctor's theology or anything. She just wants help for her physical ailment. It's outrageous. And I feel like people need to start pushing back against it. And that's one reason why I wanted to put the conference together. It's, you know, I'm done with just being shushed or having things swept under the rug. Religious trauma syndrome is real, and it's here, and it's time for us to start talking about it in the public sphere.
One of the comments I saw from one of those other groups that Janice mentioned, I won't quote it exactly, I don't have it in front of me. Basically, they said the atheists are trying to take over the the religious trauma concept, and they failed to say that it was an atheist that invented the concept, identified the concept. So we're not exactly taking over anything. We, Marlene Whannell, fucking invented it. So it's that simple. What's happening is, of course, the religious people always try to turn things upside down and in their favor. What's really happening is people who want to maintain some level of religiosity or supernatural belief are saying we're going too far. Well, the fact is we're the ones that identified it, and we're the ones pushing it. Dr. Monell, Janice, I, and many others. And what we're saying is religion itself is the issue, and they don't want to hear that. They do not want people saying spirituality is a form of superstition. Religion is a form of superstition, and superstition itself undermines people's mental health or ability to think rationally in a real world situation. Whether that be around abortion, or whether I want to go to church, or whether I want to pray about my cancer, I mean, many other things. I could list hundreds.
Yeah, religion really does rob individuals of their autonomy. It stresses obedience at all costs. There's not room for creativity unless that creativity is strictly used to honor God. That's in air quotes, honor God. And people leave religion and they're not sure who they are. They really are not sure who they are. You, in many cases, and I can use myself for an example, so someone could ask me, well, what's your favorite this or what's your favorite that? And I wouldn't even be sure, because my indoctrination was so thorough that I had a hard time separating what was really me versus what was the indoctrination. So I had to do a lot of values clarification work, trying to search out what is important to me. What do I like? What do I dislike? I happen to really like sex and different kinds of sex. And those were things that I wasn't permitted to explore before. Or if I did, it would have come with a heavy dose of shame and guilt.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. What religion were you from again? I know you've talked about it on the podcast before, but it was sure. like a weird one, wasn't it?
They're all weird. I grew up in the Pentecostal tradition, so speaking in tongues was not foreign to me. My father would speak in tongues in our home. And, you know, being slain in the spirit, again, that's in air quotes. So lots of, you know, dancing and stuff like that. And I went from that in a kind of a really different direction, still Christian, but went into a very closed Mennonite community. And they were called the Haldimands, or the Church of God in Christ Mennonites. And so with that group, very fundamentalist, so no TV. If you had a stereo in your car, you had to rip the stereo out. Head coverings for all the women, very long hair that we never cut. Men had to wear beards. The men and women were separated in the church, on had to sit on different sides of the church.
Wow.
There were rules about the, if I was wearing a skirt or dress, that, of course, that's all I could wear. There were rules about the fabric or the patterns that could be on the fabric, the size of the patterns. So heavily rule oriented, which to me was a great comfort because I grew up in a home with a narcissistic fundamentalist, my dad. And so punishment would be doled out if we didn't obey the rules. So I felt much safer with rules. And I kept making my circle smaller, as my ex-husband said. And it finally got to a point where I just couldn't take it anymore. Like the beach ball that you keep underwater for too long, you take your hands off and it breaks free from the pull and the tension of the water. And that's how my deconversion was.
And all that water splashing.
Pretty messy. It was a hot mess. It was pretty crazy. I decided at that point that I would deny myself nothing. And I did a great job of it. I managed not to wind up in jail. I survived everything. But again, my deconversion and religious deconstruction was quite messy.
It almost looked like decompression.
Yeah.
Were you raised religious as well, Dr. Ray?
Yeah. Well, I was raised in a very religious environment. It didn't seem to take with me, but I didn't get nearly as the dose that Janice did. But my parents became missionaries when they retired. My grandfather was a country church preacher for 45 years, and my other grandfather was an elder in the church the whole time and helped found. My parents founded two other churches. They were church planters.
You were the black sheep.
My parents raised all of us. We were in church three times a week or more. I was the most religious of the four boys, no girls, just four boys. And not one of us boys would darken a door of a church once we got out of high school. Mm-hmm. Somehow it didn't take for any of us, which was a good thing. I kept it the longest. None of my brothers took religion seriously, but I went on to get a master's degree in religion thinking I might be a minister. But I want to move to a little bit of the other side of what Janice experienced. She experienced super fundamentalist. I left and became a Quaker and became very liberal, super liberal. But I want to say that even liberal religious do not like to hear this, and so-called progressive religious don't like to hear this. But their religion traps the brain as well. And I love the Quakers. They're, of all the religious groups, they're probably the most tolerable in many ways, or the Unitarians rather. Mm-hmm. But when you go to a Quaker meeting and people talk about the spirit leading me, well, okay, number one, there ain't no spirits out there. It's supernatural bullshit. So who is leading you? And it means it's something around the religious framework. And it's still a brain trap. It's real a mind trap, mm-hmm. because you've got to, what you would be better to say is, I need to think and meditate on this and examine my values and go make a decision. I shouldn't be relying upon some supernatural spirit to speak to me. And that's what even the Quakers do that. So even the most religious groups, they always want to keep this spiritual card in their hip pocket. And I'm here to say that's still a prison for your mind. You need to take responsibility for your own decisions and your own thought processes.
Right on. Yeah. And once I left the Christian community entirely, I explored New Age and Eastern mysticism. So I kind of hung out in that camp for a few years, and I grew dreadlocks and I got my tattoos and my crystals and aligned my chakras and, wow. did all that kind of stuff and went to all the woo conventions. And then I got to a point where I realized, you know what? I don't need this either. And it started to just feel ickily, there's my word, ickily familiar, just like, ooh, there's something about this. They're wanting me to believe this thing. And I'm like, do you people really think that if you put a crystal on your navel, it's going to heal your whatever's going on in there in your lady parts? Because I don't think that's really true. And then becoming comfortable with saying and knowing that I am an atheist took a while as well. And I say that to just encourage any of your listeners who may be traveling this journey and they feel uncomfortable, applying some kind of label to themselves. They think they're not quite there yet. You don't have to. You don't have to put a label on yourself. It's your journey, and it will take as long as it takes. So do your research, do your self-exploration, continue growing. There's no one way to get to the end. It'll be your way.
You know, it's amazing to me how closely the mRNA vaccine is analogous to being vaccinated from religion, you know, because it's not like they put COVID in your body. They just give your body the opportunity to recognize something that looks like COVID, and then you're safe. And with you and Daryl's examples, mine as well, I grew up fundamentalist Christian, independent Baptist, and then I went toward Buddhism and Taoism right afterwards. And very quickly, I'm like, this looks all too familiar. You know, it just like you guys, like you were immersed in it, and then you jumped to something else for a little bit, and you go, nope, I know what that looks like. Just kind of like the vaccine. And I fear for my children, and I fear for children that might have grown up as atheists. Do you think that they just don't have that vaccine, that maybe they're more susceptible because they haven't been through that? Not necessarily the trauma per se would be necessary, but maybe something to build up that skepticism so that you recognize bad religion when you see it.
Well, we definitely want to be teaching our children from a very early age critical thinking and how to apply that in many different situations. So encouraging them to examine sources when people say things, and to look for evidence. And also, I think from an early age, reading stories to children from groups around the world, different cultures, like read their creation stories and creation myths, and then telling our children Christianity is just another story. Humans love stories. Stories are not true. They're, you know, often mythology related. So we can ground our kids by using those techniques from the time that they're young. And also we want to be careful not to forbid things, because, oh my, that forbidden fruit, it looks so tasty and so good. So, you know, we don't want to, if they say, well, I want to, so-and-so wants me to go to church with them next week, instead of saying, absolutely not, this family never goes to church, blah, 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 it might be a better tactic to say, well, I'm going to go as well. And I'll sit in the back so no one knows we're together, you know, that sort of thing, if your child is an adolescent. Mm-hmm. But that way you can hear what is said to them, and you can have a conversation with them about it when they get home.
Well, the conference is about trauma, and I'd like to talk a bit about what trauma is and why it's even important for us to think about this. And it relates to the susceptibility to religious infection that Janice talked about. And of course, I talk about in my book, The God Virus. Trauma is a change in the brain. It literally can be seen with an MRI scan. We can see what's going on with the amygdala, with the hippocampus, with the insula. There are parts of the brain that are affected when somebody experiences a traumatic event. Now, just because an event has the potential for trauma does not mean it creates trauma. We need to recognize, because there are some other things that come into play, and they relate directly to what Janet just said, and that is there are mitigating circumstances. There are, in other language, we call it adverse experiences, and those adverse experiences can have mitigating circumstances. If you've got a very supportive parent around you when you're exposed to a traumatic experience, that parent can help you process it, and it will not create trauma. If you've got a teacher that's really understanding around you that you can go, or if you've got a counselor, if you've got a therapist, if you've got resources to deal with it. I mean, think of the child in poverty who has no physical resources to deal with some of the trauma that comes with poverty, that they're going to be more susceptible to infection with ideas about, well, if you just believe in Jesus, you'll be able to get money. You'll be able to become wealthy and famous and all that sort of stuff. And we see this over and over again at Recovery from Religion. People come to us by the hundreds. And I could probably say it with a straight face, thousands, certainly thousands over the course of a year. We get thousands of people checking in with us, and they all exhibit signs of trauma. I would dare say 80% of the people that chat with us are expressing some kind of symptom that if I were able to get closer to them and talk to them at length as a psychologist, I could probably diagnose them with some kind of trauma directly related to the way they were raised religiously. So, Robert, part of what we're going to be talking about is what trauma is, why it's important, how it occurs, what are the mitigating circumstances. All these things are going to be part of the conference. Because the average person out there on the street is using the word trauma in some inappropriate ways or in pop culture. You know, that traumatized me or that triggered me. There's lots of misuse of this term. It's a serious term. It's something we want people to take seriously. Just as for 100 years we called shell shock. It was called shell shock coming out of World War I, World War II, battle fatigue out of World War II. And until and even Vietnam War, we didn't understand what it was. It wasn't until the research around trauma coming out of the Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan's wars, did we finally start taking it seriously. And it wasn't until some scientists were able to go in front of, at least I'm talking in terms of U.S. United States Congress, until some scientists literally went in front of congressmen in Congress and showed them MRI scans of soldiers with PTSD and demonstrated to Congress people that you can see trauma right on this MRI read. It wasn't until then the U.S. Congress took it seriously. Wow. And then started allocating funds for research. Well, all that is background for what we're going to be talking about at the conference. Not only can you see it coming out of wartime, but if you put people through an MRI in from other circumstances, one of which is religion, you can probably see the results of trauma in the brain. And that's really important.
Mm-hmm. When people leave the group, whatever the religious group they're a part of, there can be a shunning which takes place. People then they've not only lost their identity, they've lost their assumptive worldview. So how the world made sense to them has now disintegrated. It doesn't make sense anymore. And then the people that they would normally turn to for support in a time of tragedy, they no longer have those people to turn to. So that's a pretty big deal. I was so thankful to finally run into Dr. Winnell. I mean, I had already divorced religion a few years prior, but I didn't have anyone. I didn't know anyone who had been as heavily invested in their faith as I had been, who suddenly lost their faith, who didn't have it anymore. And I felt so isolated, just incredibly isolated. I was grieving, but I didn't have the words. I didn't know the words to talk about the grief that I was experiencing. And it's a grief that the world does not acknowledge. Because to those who haven't been raised in a religious setting or by religious caregivers, to them, it's just the fact that we no longer believe in Santa Claus. They say, well, you know, it's about time you woke up. Now just get on with your life. That is so invalidating and really shows a complete lack of understanding about what it's like to lose your identity and lose your worldview and lose your community. It's hard to rebuild. And when I found Marlene, then when I saw her, I saw a video of her being interviewed on a TV show, and then I found her book, and then I right away contacted her and was fortunate enough to go to one of her weekend retreats in the States. And suddenly I wasn't alone. It was like I could breathe again. I was with people who understood, even though maybe we came from different backgrounds, they still understood what I was going through. And I know Recovering from Religion also within the past year or so did a retreat. And I'm sure similar things took place, people being able to bond with others over this shared experience, these shared losses. it's a pretty big deal. And so my hope with the conference, my aim, I want to educate therapists about religious trauma syndrome. This is something that therapists, I believe, need to be asking on their intake when a client or a patient is coming to them. What is your religious background? You know, what are your current religious beliefs, if you have any? Because this, if they're not asking this, and this is permeating their entire life, it could be fueling their shame issues, their fear issues, their anger issues, and depression, of course. So I want therapists to attend the conference on religious trauma to start getting a grasp, not only of religious trauma syndrome, but some of the avenues for treatment or things that they might explore. And then the other side of the conference is I want people to attend who maybe felt as isolated as I did. And they are going to be hearing from people who are already on their healing journey, their journey of recovery. And they'll be sharing their own background stories, whether they were a member of the Moonies or Islam or Orthodox Judaism or Evangelicalism, whatever the background, the grief is similar, the loss that we experience.
I want to highlight a piece of what she said, and that's the intake process, that I see therapists as pretty much avoiding, even ignoring, religious training and background as a key source of current mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And what Janice just described is we see over and over again, people don't realize that once you intellectually figure out this is all a shell game, it's all mythology, it's all story, what they don't realize is when they leave, the emotional consequences of that lead to depression. And of course, all those people in the religion say, well, you're depressed because you left Jesus. No, you're fucking depressed because you lost your entire support group, mm-hmm. which would cause anybody to be depressed. Imagine if you were forced to leave your country of origin because as a refugee and overnight flown into another country and dropped in that country with no contact with your parents or children or anybody else, would that have emotional consequences that could lead to depression? Hell yes, it could. And that's what's happening to people all the time, over and over again, when they leave their religion. They don't realize the emotional consequences. And what we want to do is help people. We want to tell them, look, there's emotional consequences, and we have ways to help mitigate some of those consequences. Because I'm here to tell you, leaving religion itself can be traumatic. It can cause trauma. Mm-hmm. And that's why so many people seem to go through a depressive state after leaving religion.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent point, Daryl. And we really do become, in a sense, spiritual refugees. And that is also that leaves us so vulnerable. And that's when we start bouncing to something else. You checked out Quakerism. I camped out in New Age for a while. We need to also become aware of the tactics, the psychological tactics that are used by religious groups and other high control groups. We must educate ourselves on these so that we can see them in the future and we can walk away from such groups.
Guys, I've really, really appreciated this. Before I wrap up, I just wanted to say you're so right about the therapist. You both pointed that out. But the wife and I, right, we've been married about 14 years, right about the 7-8 year mark. We say, wow, we're fighting a lot. We're having a lot of trouble. Some of it from sexual shame stuff that we got from religious culture, right? Mm-hmm. And also, there was this compulsion that I had to not just be in charge. You know, it's like we always put like the patriarchy thing, like as if the men are jerks that come out of religion, but in a lot of ways they are victims as well, because they're told it's all your fault no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. you don't have enough money in the home, the wife's not listening, of course. The woman is being treated badly in that scenario with a lack of equality. But the man's being told, no matter what goes wrong, it's your fault. That's another form of shame. I had a lot of that stuff too. As the marriage was falling apart, I thought, man, I'm not being, you know, the godly man of the household. I'm doing everything wrong when, you know, it takes two to tango, of course. But we finally get marriage therapist. We go to the address that she gives us. We pull into a church parking lot. Oh. And both of us are like, and we were fresh atheists. You know, and we pull in there and
We're like, what in the world? This can't be it. And we're like, that's the address, honey. It's the address. And like, no, it's not the address. Yes, it is the address. And we're like, we're fighting before we get in there. We walk in the place and there she is in one of the offices. We sit down. First thing we say is, we didn't expect your office to be in a church. And she's like, oh, don't worry. I just needed the space and it was cheap. I'm like, all right. And then she starts in and it wasn't long into that, just the initial interview part. That she starts asking about, well, are we going to church regularly? Have we spoken to our preacher about our marriage issues and all this junk? And it was such a letdown because it takes a lot of courage to try to get help.
Yeah.
And then you just get hit with this religious crap and it just deflates you.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's even one reason why I did my deep dive into fundamentalism was because my marriage was very difficult. But I was certain the problem couldn't be with my husband because God had given him to me to be my spiritual head. So the problem must be with me. And so then I see these women who are wearing head coverings and I read that it's an act of submission on their part. And I figure out, well, that it must be me. I'm not submissive enough. I'm going to put on this outward reminder constantly to myself to be submissive. Guess what? It didn't take. So we're no longer married, but we are very good friends. But I can definitely relate to that scenario.
At the risk of redundancy, but just in case the listener forgot already, where can they find court? When can they find court? How can they access it? What do you recommend there?
You are going to have a link in the description of this fantastic show. The link will take your listener directly to the website and they can register from there. And it's taking place May 11th to 16th online. And there's two different types of tickets. They can purchase an all-access ticket, which includes attending all the events live online. And they also then have access to the recordings, or for time zone differences or cost or whatever they need, they can instead just purchase a resources ticket, which would be simply purchasing the recordings, access to the recordings.
And Janice, am I correct? There's potential for CEUs for therapists who attend?
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. Yes, they can earn up to six CEs, as we call them in Canada, continuing education credits or continuing education units. So hopefully that will help some folks make the decision. If they are in the mental health profession, this is a conference that they really do need to attend.
And
I was going to say, I will get my two cents in here, too. If people need immediate help, not therapeutic, but peer support help, they can always go to recoveringfromreligion.org, hit the chat button. And on our main webpage, we have a direct link to court. So if you get to RFR and you want to know where court is, you can hit the link. It'll take you right to where Janice is talking about. And if you need a therapist, you know, and you need direct professional help, go to seculartherapy.org. Mm-hmm. Register as a client and you'll be able to search. And a lot of therapists are doing online stuff because of COVID. Mm-hmm. So it's actually easier in some ways to find a therapist than it was before COVID.
That's right.
And they can get $15 off if they type in POD 15. Is that correct, Janice?
That's right. All uppercase POD 15. And that will get them a nice $15 discount off their registration.
That's
good. And we do have a discount available for students as well. So there's an email address. They can drop me a line there and explain their situation.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you both so much. I really appreciate it. It's always so good talking to you guys.
It was a treat.
Thank you to Janice and Daryl. Thank you to Dave Blair at DaveBlairMusic.com. Thank you to Feedspot.com for promoting the Right to Reason to the Top 10 Atheist Podcasts. Thank you to our patrons, Jason Parker, Freethinker215, Alan Marks, Philip Spawn, Bernard Lamorel, Animal Man, Larry Wilson, and our top supporter, Rob Montgomery. You can support this broadcast at patreon.com/right and learn more at therighttoreason.com. This week was scheduled to debate a highly educated German theologian, but I wanted to get you all this court info as soon as possible. So next week, I'm debating the aforementioned theologian about whether one's own personal experience is justification for the belief in the divine. Between now and then, remember that you have the right to reason.
It's the Right to Reason Podcast.
To Reason Podcast.